Topic for today will be on the red zone, which refers to the period from mid-August to November when new college and university students are most vulnerable to sexual assaults. Oh, wow. Today, as I said, we are joined by Tisha Beatty from DIA Houston, which is a nonprofit whose mission is to empower South Asian survivors of abuse through culturally specific services.
Hello, ladies. Welcome.
It's been a while since I've interviewed you.
I know.
Oh, we've had
I feel like it's been a solid 6 months that I haven't seen you.
Wow.
I feel
you need to come see me more often.
I really do. I really do. I love every second that I spend with you ladies here.
That's so sweet. We miss our little Tisha. So I have a question. Well, obviously we're going to have the Q&A, but what is the red zone?
So, you know, the red zone, as you kind of mentioned, it's the period from August till actually mid-November when transfer students, college freshmen are the most vulnerable to being sexually assaulted on campus.
Is it because it's the beginning of the school
year? Yeah. So imagine, like, for the last 4 years of life, right? Yeah. 3 or 4 years of life, we've been in this very big bubble of COVID.
Yes.
A lot of freshmen started off their careers, you know, college careers at home on a computer. So this is the first time they're coming onto campus this year, or kind of last semester, but this year specifically. And a lot of college freshmen who have this newfound independence for the first time in their lives.
Yes.
They're staying on campus. Mom and dad aren't around to tell them, you know, or not tell them, but teach them how to live.
Of course.
And so a lot of college students actually come onto campus and they want these new experiences like any other student would. But it's so important for, you know, campuses to actually educate students on this topic.
Yeah.
But it seems like not a lot of campuses around Texas specifically are doing any sort of sex education as of right now about the red zone. So sexual assaults from beginning in August till November are the highest we'll ever see in a student's life. And it's very sad because
that's 4 months.
Yeah. And there's actually, I was reading up on it. A lot of people are bound to dropping out of college too if they do experience sexual assault in the first semester that they're on campus. It's extremely demotivating. So, you know, people always talk about, oh, like so many kids dropped out because they're lazy, they're unmotivated. You never know.
There's no statistics.
Yeah. No, I haven't really, you know, been able to find that because sexual assault isn't reported as often as well on campuses. And so it's really just like a very dangerous period and really important period for like college administration and parents to keep checking in with their kids.
Yeah.
No matter, you know, how upset you might be about what happened, but like really being there for your, you know, college student that's going off.
Yeah. And I think the sad part about it is that because if it's happened to a student, that whole shameful aspect of it for them, that they don't report it and then speak on it with their parents also. And I think that happens a lot in the South Asian community because you're just like, oh, you can't speak on it because then it becomes more real. And then what if your parents don't accept it?
Absolutely.
What if they say it's your fault? You know,
so, and it's more than like this victimization. It becomes into this shameful thing where I've been assaulted. Like, and, you know, parents think it's a shame to their families that their child has been assaulted. But in reality, it's a shame to society in general that, you know, we haven't been able to protect the young students that are, you know, about to start their lives for the first time. And it should be such a beautiful experience. But unfortunately, because of lack of education and lack of just, I think, knowledge around like sexual education as well, it's causing this really like this high spike of assaults on campus.
I wish there was more. It was spoken about more. I wish there was more knowledge that was sent to not just the parents, the students, and in campuses.
Yeah, I remember my freshman year at U of H in 2014. We had like a 2-day on-campus orientation before we moved in.
Yeah.
So I came from Dallas. You know, I was setting up everything. I swear we had a 10-minute session on like just safety. It was like, oh, UH Cougs get consent. Don't partake in drinking or, you know, doing any like illicit substances. And then you're off.
Wow.
That was the only education I ever got about just like campus safety in general.
Wow.
That's and crazy. I'm not assuming things have changed. I'm not really sure.
I doubt it. Yeah. So why are students more vulnerable to violence during this time?
You know, as I just mentioned, you're kind of you're starting your new life, and you're away from your parents. Parents are, you know, sort of, they're giving you space too. I remember I went from like seeing my parents every single day to them being like, you know, she's going to be busy on campus. So I'll only call her like once in a while.
Yeah.
And that felt amazing at first, right? Yeah. But by week three, I was calling them every day. But they're navigating this newfound space, and there are so many new experiences to have, you know, to indulge in on campus. Like freshman year, I remember it like all the fraternities and sororities would come out to campus and have their like, you know, signs up and everything that come see who we are and what we do. And so it's really intriguing to see like, oh my gosh, I've only heard of these things on movies or on TV shows. The parties look so fun. Let me go too.
Yeah.
But nobody really teaches you that like, hey, maybe if you haven't ever drank in your life, it's not a great idea to go in and do like 20 shots, you know? Yeah. Or if you haven't, you know, really met, if you're not going with a friend, make sure you have a way to like get back to the dorms, or you know the campus security numbers just in case anything goes wrong. But at that time, you're just so like consumed by the newness of everything. So that really does contribute to the vulnerability of students on campus for the first time. And there's this, I don't know if y'all ever felt this way when y'all were, you know, freshmen in college, that when like older students would talk to you and, you know, specifically like boys, right? You'd be like, oh my gosh, like a junior is talking to me and wants to like, you know, take me out on a date.
Yeah.
In essence, like, it isn't great that, like, I was 17 when I was a freshman, so for me, it probably wasn't the best idea to, like, talk to a junior in college who was, like, 20, you know, while I was still 17. Yeah. I'm not even an adult at that point.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, experiences like that, you think that they're really cool, but in reality, now that we're older, we recognize that it's not the safest thing to be doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just experiencing a new life, and getting caught in the moment, and really just being vulnerable because you're really, I mean, you're overwhelmed with school.
Yes.
You want an outlet. You want to be social. You want to be able to hang out with a new group of friends and be cool, maybe for the first time. I know I was not popular at all in the high school, but in college, I was like, oh my gosh, I have a brand new opportunity to like, you know, spread my wings.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's situations like that. And so that definitely leads to the, you know, college students being more vulnerable.
I wish there was, like, pamphlets that can be, like, stand outside the college and give to the student. Like, here you go.
If there was a to-do and to-not-do list, I would have appreciated that so much. And just, like, mentors. I know a lot of colleges, a lot of, like, upperclassmen specifically do mentor the younger students.
Yeah.
I teach a course at Rice University. It's called Critical Thinking and Sexuality. And so it's kind of Rice University's efforts on decreasing sexual assault cases on campus.
Yeah.
And so they actually have a great program that, you know, juniors and seniors at Rice are sort of mentoring the younger students.
Wow.
And then we're coming in and giving this, like, 1 hour a week lecture on violence prevention. And so, I mean, I don't know about the statistics just yet, if it's working or not, but stay tuned, I guess.
Wow.
Maybe next year I'll have some statistics about this.
Yes, and I will hold you to it. What support is present on college campuses for students who have faced acts of sexual or domestic violence?
You know, a lot of campuses have Title IX offices that are dedicated to handling sexual assault and domestic violence and even family violence cases. I like to talk about family violence because sometimes students are moving to another city but living with maybe their uncles and aunts and cousins. And so family violence is very prevalent during this time as well. And so every college campus does have a Title IX office. And they have counselors, administration that is dedicated to assisting students in need when there is a harassment case. they kind of help guide students through the process of reporting, possibly getting like a SANE exam, right? Like the rape kit done. Oh. They have guidance on connecting them with agencies like DIA, you know, very on cool. campus. And so really just a great group of people just dedicated, you know, their lives are dedicated to assisting students. I forgot to mention, there's also like faculty to student violence that can be seen as well.
Really?
And so these Title IX offices make sure that like faculty members are also not exhibiting any like sort of power and control onto the students as they're navigating, you know, their college lives.
Yeah.
College campuses also, health centers on campus, they, have connections as well to help students who might, you know, unfortunately have been like raped, for example, to get them to the right place at the right time, because you do have like a very short limit on how long you can wait before you can, you know, save all your results from a swab and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, on-campus health centers are a great place for students to also go to. And that's fully confidential.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Okay. Now, is the use of drugs and alcohol the reason behind sexual assault cases?
I feel like every person on this planet feels like it is.
Yeah.
It is not the reason behind sexual assault or domestic violence. It is just something that possibly can encourage it, because when you are under the influence, you might not have the best, you know, thought processes.
Absolutely.
And so I never like to say that this assault happened because somebody drank or did drugs, you know. Sexual assault and domestic violence is a choice somebody makes. Perpetrators or harm doers would assault somebody when sober. It really doesn't it doesn't matter to them. Everybody has the capacity to harm others, but you know, my kind of harming might be like not letting a person cross the crosswalk before I take a right, but like everybody has the capacity to harm, and these people will harm whether alcohol or drugs are used as well. But you know, alcohol and drugs do make, you know, survivors and victims more susceptible, though, because when you are not in that right state of mind, it's really hard to discern what's happening and what's not happening to you.
Yeah.
A lot of times, if you're being, you know, drugged at a party, you kind of black out and you don't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
And you might not even know what happened to you the next morning.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of college students actually struggle coming forward with their abuse or assault, because they themselves don't remember the details.
Yeah.
And a lot of college students think, I'm going to get in trouble because I was drinking underage.
Mm.
And that's really not the case.
Yeah.
You know, drinking underage is one thing, but like assault is a whole another, you know, mammoth of an event to deal with. Yeah.
Wow. And then how many students on campus are sexually assaulted?
The last I saw, 19% of college students will be assaulted during their time in school. So that means one in approximately 5 students, and that's both male and female survivors. A lot of that's one struggle that we're dealing with as well, is that like a lot of male survivors don't come forward because, you know, there's this whole idea that like, oh my god, if a woman hit on you, like it's actually a compliment to you, you know, it's not like assault in any way. Like the students come together and they're like, bro, like, it's so cool that that girl, you know, kissed you without, you know, any sort of warning. But that's assault just as much as, you know, any other male to female assault.
Yeah.
Like that, I guess it's equivalent is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. It's just not looked upon that way.
Right. And I think our society does a really bad job at providing safe spaces for men, and especially the South Asian community does not provide space for men to come forward and say, hey, I've been assaulted on campus, or, you know, my family member that I was living with was doing, like, I fell asleep and I don't know, I woke up with something down my pants, or like them feeling me up. That these situations do happen, and it's so important that we recognize that it's just not our like daughters that we have to protect. It's also our sons.
Absolutely.
And letting them know that, hey, like this can happen to you. Yeah. And if it ever does, that we are open to like hearing you out.
Yeah. I think movies have a bad job of sometimes putting that out there and making it seem like it's okay. Mm-hmm. When in reality, it's not.
Absolutely. I think the newer age movies are doing a really great job at, providing context on the different types of assaults and stuff on campus. Yeah. But I know for a fact, like, when my parents were watching movies, none of that was coming up for them.
Yeah.
And so how did they know to educate me on anything
exactly.
when I was going into college?
It's funny because I'd gone to my parents' house. This was this happened a few months ago, and my dad, the TV was on, and they were watching some Hindi movie with Amitabh Bachchan, and it was the girl in the movie was in a swimsuit, and she's walking by, and a bunch of people are whistling at her. So she goes to the station, the police station, and she makes a complaint, and the guy, the Amitabh Bachchan, he's like, "Well, if you hadn't worn something like that, then that wouldn't happen." Oh, that just like burned me inside. Like, why is that even okay to say? But again, like you said, back then, those were okay. Messages were okay to say, but not anymore. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. But her response was good. She was like, "It shouldn't be what I'm wearing." Or didn't really see the whole movie, but
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the topics that we're going to discuss later as well. But I was watching this show. I don't know if y'all have heard of it, Made in Heaven.
Yes.
And
yes,
so
it's a good show.
It's a very relevant show because it's like the new age, like Delhi, and like how families in Delhi.
Oh yeah, yeah. The gay couple.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so a lot, that show really shows a lot about like assault as well.
Yeah.
And there was this one episode. I don't know why my brother's been binging the show recently, but I saw an episode and there was this girl that had been assaulted and a video of her was circulated in the school, in a school in Delhi.
Yeah.
And the parents were talking to the kids and the sons who were allegedly the violators.
Yeah.
They were like, "Well, like, you know, she is actually not a good person because she's hooked up with so many guys already. So whatever happened to her, she asked for it."
Yeah.
And it was so amazing to see that in a show made in Delhi, the mothers were saying that is not the way to think about it. So what if she's done what she's done? That doesn't mean she was asking for any, type of violence towards her. So I think media is doing a good job now.
Getting there. Yeah, absolutely. Like seeing the Ajay Devgan movie, I can't remember the name of it, but it was something with the assault on his daughter. When I think of the movie, I'll let you know. But that was a good movie too. As a part two. But we'll get into that. So who exactly are the perpetrators?
They're anyone and everyone. As I said before, everybody has the capacity to harm others. Maybe a joke I make might not sit well with you, Sasha, and you might think about it for the rest of your day. And until and unless, like, you tell me about it, I won't know that I really harmed you, right? But that's a very small example. But, like, in a larger scheme, I want to say that it's not that people are born rapists or people aren't born as abusers. There are things that happen during childhood that, makes them believe that their actions are right. Or just overall the lack of education.
Yeah.
I do this really great activity with college students where I give them scenarios of, like, certain things, like, oh, like, you're on a date, you're really flirtatious, but, you fall asleep next to each other. But then suddenly you wake up with the guy's, like, hands down your pants and you're startled. But then you pretend to just go back to sleep. Yeah. So I ask them, I'm like, where did the consent get taken away? Like, was there consent?
Yeah.
And oftentimes they say no, like, they fell asleep. Some people say maybe because they were flirting, right?
Yeah.
But then I also ask them this question because I think this makes them really think. I'm like, why did the harm doer think that what they did was right or okay?
Yeah.
And so then a lot of people will say, oh, because, like, they were flirting, they were on a date, they slept next to each other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this really makes college students and even some adults in the room recognize that, hey, if we don't educate our youth on sexual assault, they might think that their actions are okay. Because a lot of people do think that if you've been flirty, that you do have consent to do whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. And so... everybody does have the capacity to do wrong. And it could be, as I mentioned earlier, college administrators, professors. You know, you hear numerous stories about professors having really horrible relationships with students. And that's a whole dynamic of power and control that we don't talk about as often. Campus, just, you know, upperclassmen.
Yeah.
Projecting that same type of power and control onto the younger students. So everyone can perpetrate violence. It's just about making a conscious decision to not do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. So how can students protect themselves in a social setting from violence?
I actually hate this question because I think it kind of puts the blame or the responsibility of protecting yourself onto the survivors themselves.
Yeah.
It's teaching people that, oh, yeah, violence is still going to exist. It's on you to protect yourself. But I think it is our responsibility because we do see that rates of sexual violence are only rising. Yeah. It is our responsibility to teach everyone that, like, hey, even though we're doing our best to teach people to not be bad people, that there are steps that you can take in order to protect yourself from an unsafe situation. So to answer your question, what can you do? You can I always encourage that educating yourself on, like, kind of exits, the same way you would think about, like, maybe a mass shooting.
Yeah.
You think the same way that if you're going on a date or, you know, you're going out somewhere, that you know that if you get put into an unsafe situation, you know exactly where to leave from.
I love that.
Taking a friend with you, your roommate, you know, your best friends, whoever it might be, so that if they see that something has happened to you or vice versa, that you both can sort of join forces, have the buddy system.
Yeah.
You know, your friend can come up and say, oh, my God, I spilled a drink on myself. I need Sasha to come with me right now.
Yeah.
Distraction, right?
Yes.
There could be delegation as well that, like, I know this sucks to ever do, but, like, possibly calling an RA, you know, to the dorm room that the party's happening in, telling them about what is happening, that, hey, these kids are drugging everyone around us. They're not conscious anymore. Delegation is really important. It's scary. It really is. But it saves people from being assaulted. And then really just trusting your gut at the end of the day. I think we all as humans have this, like, innate tendency to ignore what our gut is saying because we're just like, oh, I'm just being, like, I'm overthinking this.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you don't feel that you're at ease somewhere, it's honestly the best to just trust your gut and leave the situation. And honestly, when I've left parties, when I was in a sorority, I've left sometimes – I've heard the craziest things happening the next day.
Wow.
You know, and so I'm a big advocate of really trusting your gut.
Yeah.
But once again, I want to reiterate that it's never, you know, the survivor's fault for not doing something, you know.
Yes,
I think a lot of South Asian parents will say, like, hey, like, why were you at the party in the first place? And why didn't you leave? Why didn't you think that it was, like, the best time to leave? But that is never the right thing to do.
No,
it's never the right way to go about these things.
So going back to the questions, why is sexual assault on campus so underreported?
That's a great question. And I think we're still trying to research this till this day. Because statistically, when, you know, already the statistics are so high, right, that 1 in 5 you know, college students will face some sort of sexual violence on campus, but it's often underreported because it is just a very, very strenuous journey of reporting. This is no shade to Title IX offices on campus. I know they're trying to do their best, but it's just a very lengthy process. Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, sometimes college students don't even know that they've been assaulted. They think assault just means rape. But assault includes, like, harassment of any sort, any unwanted touch, or, you know, even digital sexual harassment, that if you've maybe shared an intimate picture with somebody and they're going to post it or tell people that they're posting it, or even showing their friends, you know, that's also sexual violence. But, you know, a lot of college students don't recognize that they've been assaulted or, you know, violated. And then the second thing is, when a student has been violated, there's such a big stigma on campus too, that, like, oh my gosh, if I report this, then everybody possibly around me is going to know that this happened, because they do put out a statement. They keep the name confidential, but they put out a statement that a student has been, you know, assaulted on campus. If you need any, like, counseling or anything, you can come to our offices. But if it's somebody, you know, if you haven't really revealed it to anybody and you start, you know, going through this process of reporting, people can pinpoint that it's you. So there's that stigma on campus as well. Yeah. And then there's just, like, the shame that comes with also saying that you've been assaulted. There's such a large stigma around it that shame comes with it as well. Yeah. And so, going to the Title IX office saying you have been assaulted, going through getting a rape kit done, you know, going to possibly court to see the person that assaulted you, those are all, like, very traumatizing things that, you know, one has to go through in order to even report their assault. Yeah. And lastly, I think people just don't know that there are resources on campus that can help them confidentially, you know, report their assault. That if you're not ready to report on campus, that you can come to DAIA and report the assault and get fully confidential, you know, help off campus, where you might not even have to deal with people on campus. And so, yeah, there, it's just so many terrible reasons as to why, you know, cases are underreported. But we're doing our best to make sure that every student, you know, going into school now knows that resources do exist and they're not alone. And the person next to you could have gone through something like that too, and that it's okay that, you know, this has happened to you. It's not okay that it happened to you, but it's going to be okay. Yes.
Yeah. Are there support groups and stuff like that?
I'm not really sure. I think some campuses might have, like, you know, mentors that once you have reported, that can, like, the Title IX offices might have, like, people who have dedicated their, you know, time to helping. But I'm not sure of any group like that. And it wouldn't be publicized either, in my, like, opinion, because it is a very unsafe, you know, thing to do, because the perpetrators might come after you too. And that's one reason too, is that you fear retaliation as well once you report assault.
So many aspects go with it. Is sexual assault linked to attraction, meaning what drives a person to committing assault?
Man, I don't know why I give you these questions, because I hate them. But it's so important to talk about it, because I think a lot of people do think that sexual assault is linked to sexual attraction, that the perpetrator has this, like, tendency and has this sexual desire to get things done. And it's not. It's, as I mentioned earlier, an abuser will abuse whether they're attracted to them or not, will abuse. I actually, side note, I found out just this last week that a perpetrator knows that you are going to be a victim of their violence in the first 7 seconds that they see you.
Really? Wow. That's scary.
That's whether it's, like, a shooting, you know, sexual assault, domestic violence, family violence. Wow. When they walk in and they see you, in the first 7 seconds, they know.
Wow. That's a scary thought.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, this whole idea that I think a lot of our community, specifically South Asian community, has is that, oh, you know, that kid probably has been a loner their whole lives, has never gotten any physical, you know, touch from anyone, isn't loved. And so that's why they, you know, they came forward and assaulted somebody. But it's not true. Sexual attraction and sexual assault aren't often linked. There's no research saying that because X person was attracted to Y person that X person assaulted.
Wow. Okay. Does the way you dress invite assault?
Oh my gosh. I know. I'm sorry. But these are such just, I mean, it's because we hear this so much in the community that like,
or on social media too.
Oh my gosh. And so a lot of people think that, oh, if the girl was wearing a short dress or a short skirt or showing too much skin, that she was inviting the assault. Because how is a man supposed to contain his tendencies, right?
Whatever. I really want to punch that person.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, like maybe I can't control my tendency to like. Not at all saying you should violate anyone.
But it's
been sort of immersed in our society that, you know, don't wear clothing that might make another person think that you're inviting any sort of assault. I also hate that, I don't know if y'all ever have done this maybe and are great parents who self-reflect or have it done to you, where if somebody's coming over to the house, I know this happened to me so many times where, you know, my dad's friend would come over to the house and my mom would be like, oh, go change out of your shorts, like put leggings on because blah, 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 uncle is over.
At my parents' house, yes, not in my house.
And exactly. Yeah. And then I started asking my mom, I'm like, if this uncle is so creepy, then why?
Why are you getting invited?
Yeah. I'm like, shorts are something that, you know, I'm supposed to be able to wear freely when I'm visiting you guys at home, you know? So why is this creepy person around? And so that's a whole another conversation I had with my parents where I was just like, in general, like, can we stop having people over that might like sexualize me, you know? Yeah. And so there's that kind of way of also being taught that what you wear dictates how another person will treat you.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like us women need to change the way we dress just so that we're not inviting any type of, you know, unwanted attraction or
attention.
But men
can roam around in shirtless and that's okay.
Or with their hands down their pants. Yeah. They're always doing something. So, going back to the original question, the way you dress, as we discussed with that Amitabh Bachchan movie as well, does not invite any type of sexual advances. Rather,
don't believe that it does, because I'm sure there are girls, you know, who believe that the way you dress, because that's what's been instilled in their head as they have been growing up. Like, you were able to talk back, but I'm sure there are girls who will just be quiet and listen.
That's how it becomes normalized, right?
Exactly.
That for so many centuries back home, women were taught that you have to dress appropriately and cover up so that you don't get harassed in any way.
Yeah, remember like my dad's house, I wasn't allowed to wear sleeveless. Forget shorts. Shorts is a long time. But sleeveless wasn't allowed. And now when you think back, but it's not their fault, it's the society, right? So as we are changing as parents, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad we're having this conversation that, you know, you can actually, I'm so proud of you for telling your parents, you know, because they probably don't realize it either.
I'm very lucky that they're like, they listen to me because
but then that's
it's
the
so
difference,
important.
Right? Like, I know, like, she wouldn't have, and I know I wouldn't have, like, gone to my parents, like, why?
Yeah, never.
Just do it, done. Like, then, no questions asked.
Absolutely.
But my sister, who's older than me, I love her because she goes by her rules.
No, but is it now, or she did it before
always,
too? She's always.
That's amazing.
Okay. But because she was so
strong-willed.
And I love that she was like, you know what? I should not have to change the way I dress.
Yeah.
Of course, she respected my parents. That's not the case. But she made sure my mom knew that, you know, it's okay. It's, like, I can dress like this. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, was like, okay.
I'm not going to get into
it. I'm the baby of the family. I'm just going to listen. Yeah.
Because sometimes that, like, argument isn't even like worth it, because if you just know that, you know, society is going to think this way, your parents think that way, your grandparents think this way, then what's the point of even bringing it up? But like, we're here for that change.
Yes, absolutely.
And I wanted to also mention that there's this really cool project. The name slipped my mind, but basically a bunch of survivors came together and they hung up the clothes that they were assaulted in.
Ooh, wow.
And there were full jeans, full, like, baggy t-shirts. There were sweatpants, implying that it wasn't what they were wearing. It wasn't what they were doing.
Yeah.
They didn't have too much makeup on or too much whatever people say, you know, that they were just living their lives and that happened to them.
Wow.
That's so powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
For those women to come forward, because I mean, it's not easy, you know, especially because I'm thinking, I went to college and luckily nothing happened, but this wasn't even a thought back then, you know. But if something would have happened, I wouldn't know that there are these agencies that you can report to, right? Because there is no education, you know. But I remember going to an orientation. I just don't remember what was in it. But if they included in the orientation or those 100,000 forms you have to fill up online, somewhere there has to be some way of educating.
Yeah. But I feel like this should start in elementary.
Yeah.
And in middle school, and in high school, all the way to college. Like, this is a continued education. It needs to be spoken about freely in every aspect of their school lives.
Sure.
We always say that the younger you start the conversations, the easier it is just to add on to it. We're not saying in middle school, talk to your kid about assault.
Right. No.
But we're saying in middle school, maybe you talk about boundaries.
But they are saying something, because I remember the other day, and school just started for us last Wednesday. And then my son came and he's like, you know, pantsing. So you know what pantsing is like? Mm-hmm. And he does that to my little one they just like, they're playing and they pull down like my little one's pants. And he would get like really upset. So he came and he told me that, Mom, that's considered sexual assault now.
Wow.
Yes. And I was like, how do you know this? So they made an announcement. Apparently they still have like announcements systems, or something. Yeah, yeah. So they use it. And I was like, okay, that's a start.
That's good.
That's amazing to hear.
So they are somewhere, I think, I'm glad that they're making this change where, you know, they're educating them.
Wow.
So... Yeah.
I mean, good job to your son's school, because
it's for Ben, so
that we were not taught any of this.
Right? Yeah. And I'm so glad, because I know how upset my youngest one would get, and he's like, they're 4 years apart. But I'm sure this was happening a lot at the middle school where the kids think it's just okay.
That is funny.
Yeah. And boys, you know, they're rough. So I'm so glad that they're making this.
Yeah. I remember when I was in middle school, like, some boys would, like, through your shirt, like, come and unhook your bra. And I was like, how is that
ever? It's not okay. Yeah, I remember that, too. Oh, or just, like, pull it.
Plucking. Yeah. And I'm just like, what the heck did we go through back
then? Yeah. And, I mean, the girls probably thought at that time that, oh, like, he likes me. Or isn't there a movie about that, too? Like, I don't remember, but there is an English movie about, like, you know, the things we do and we think it's okay because they're attracted to us, right? Yeah. So we do.
We've been always taught that if a boy likes you, he'll pull your hair.
Yes, that was it.
He'll be mean to you.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, the things I would do.
So bad. But it is changing.
It is changing, and that's why we are here. So,
absolutely. Cool. That's amazing. Okay. Okay, here we are. Okay, in addition to college campuses, where else do you see sexual assault occurring?
It's really sad, and especially because, I mean, we're just talking about that fact that your kids just went back to school.
Yeah.
over the summer, you know, we do see like a rise in assaults for children because they're just simply home more often, right? Not everybody has the privilege of having a parent at home watching, you know, have like doing activities. A lot of people, parents are working or single parents that have to hire help, you know, or send kids off to a daycare, send kids off to family members' houses. And so we're seeing a rate, or like the rate of assault in, you know, children and teens is rising, but we can't really pinpoint like, okay, why is it rising? So these are, I can't tell you that this is statistically proven, but this is just what we as an agency and just the collective is observing. So we really encourage that, you know, doing background checks, having really like real conversations, even with your children that might be really young, saying that, hey, you know, when somebody changes your diaper, like, you know, you know, if they do this, tell them stop, like telling them to learn the word stop, or telling them about the day, a lot of telling you about their day, right? A lot of parents think like, oh my gosh, these kids love to make stuff up.
I have a cute story. So we were at your house for a pool party, and we have this cute nephew. He's like four, okay? And his mom was waiting outside, and she's like, yeah, you can take him to shower because I have like, you know, a kid close to his age. And so I was like taking off his pants to give to his mom, and his mom's sitting right outside. He said, so are you going to look at me naked? Like, you know? But I'm sure his mom was talking, you know? So that I'm like so proud of him for that, you know? Because he was aware, like, okay, this is somebody else, right?
And could you imagine if it was somebody who isn't you, who might have wanted to, like, unfortunately do something? Yeah. That might person... That person might have like a second thought and be like, oh my gosh, no.
He knows. Yeah.
He's going to tell somebody. And so in the same way, like teaching your kids no-no zones, telling people, like teaching your kids how to say stop, really listening about, you know, to them about their day, because kids will, I mean, they have wild imaginations, but they're never going to make up that, hey, grandma might have touched me the wrong way today. They're never going to make that up, you know? Or my babysitter, like, took a picture of me while I was, like, showering. Like, you know, just some things like that. Teaching them that, you know, what's right, what's wrong. That includes you guys as well, right? That when you're like, if you just want to hug your kid and your kid says like, not right now, mom, like, don't force it, because that teaches them that like it's okay.
And I've always told my girls that if you don't feel like hugging somebody, it's okay, it's your body. You decide who you want to hug and not hug.
Exactly.
And I've always told them that. And there's like this this is my no-no zone, there's a song on YouTube, and I made them watch this video. And even, like, when we start school, I always tell them, remember your boundary. Like, remember there's a space that if someone is talking to you, you have to have space between you. And if you feel uncomfortable where they're too close to you, then you need to, you know, remember that you tell them to step back or you step back.
That's
but there
amazing.
Has to be space between you two. So I try my best to educate my kids in that sense. But again, you're not with them 24/7.
Right.
And it's just such a scary world out there, and you want to protect them, but the only tool that you can give them is by educating them in these
Because education and knowledge is power. Because we can't let our kids live in fear and the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
So I think education is the best we can do as parents.
And teaching them that, hey, if you're at a family party and you don't want to hug someone, teaching them to say, I prefer a high five.
That's amazing.
Has happened to me where I've gone to my parents' family like parties. And a kid literally told me, I prefer a high five. And I was like, great. I love this for you. You know, that you're telling me what you want rather than like me awkwardly maybe giving you a hug or like just a fist bump, you know, like a wave. Not forcing your kids ever to let go of their boundaries, because they know their boundaries at a very young age.
They have that sense of not feeling comfortable around certain people. They'll they'll back off, and you can see their body language when they do that.
Yeah. And I have another story. So we were at our prayer place. So at our prayer place, we all sit like we are on sitting on our bums, you know. Mm-hmm. And then like, so there were these four kids. They were kids, like literally like maybe 4 years old and 2 years old. And they were just like talking, and the little one was bothering the older one or something. And the older one was a girl, and she's like, "He doesn't like it that way. You are in his space. You need to move out of his personal space." My heart was just so amazing. Mother, you're doing a phenomenal job. Because if this four-year-old, she shouldn't have been more than four, like, you know. And she was, like, clearly, like, stating exactly, you know. And I'm like, that's amazing. It's amazing, you know. So parents are making that change. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's just great.
Hearing these types of things makes me so happy that, like, things are getting better.
So it's great. And they were just, like, playing with each other. They weren't even fighting or whatever. But, you know, that whole thing of her boundaries were.
That's amazing. Yeah. Shout out to those moms. Yeah. Shout out to you, moms. Doing your part in, like, educating your youth to know signs, but also to, like, recognize that some things are right and some things aren't, because that's just as important as well. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. We're almost out of time. Okay. But before we go, where can a child go to get help for their personal situations?
Thank you for, we're going to end the show on this note. A child, first of all, you know, for a child, parents are like the best source of knowledge, assistance. Really having these open conversations with your children really allows them to know that you're going to help them in a judgment-free zone. You know, that like if they've gone to a party, you're not going to focus on that. You're going to focus on, hey, this is what happened at the party. Having these open and honest conversations from a very young, you know, age really does help build that relationship. But that doesn't mean you can't build it now. Like now having a really honest conversation can open those doors up. Unfortunately, because most of the time sexual assaults are done by perpetrated by somebody that people know. 80% of the time it's somebody that you do know.
Wow.
8 out of 10 assaults. Sometimes, unfortunately, it is the parents perpetrating the violence. So for kids to know that, hey, you know, your school counselor is a mandated reporter. So if you go and tell your school counselor, this has happened to me, they will get you help. They're legally bound to help you. Your teachers, your, you know, your friends' parents. I know if any one of your kids, you know, friends came to you and said, like, hey, you know, something happened at home, you guys would be the first people to, like, probably dial Daya up to ask.
Yes, we'd be
like,
dialing Daya up first. Yes, for sure.
And so just, like, keeping an eye out for, like, your kids' friends as well. Because if you see them acting differently, maybe that's a good time to have a conversation with their parents or the kid themselves. Yeah. And then, so as I mentioned, parents, on-campus counselors for, like, kids in school, and then for college kids, Title IX offices and health centers. And for anyone above the age of 18, DIA, you know, agencies like us who are around Texas and Houston in general, we can assist. And so,
why don't you give your contact information?
Yes. And so you can find us. You would think I would have the phone number memorized, but, you know.
We've been doing this for 6 years and I still don't have the phone number.
I know. And so you can find us on all social media. We're at Daya Houston. And our confidential helpline, which is open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 p.m., our number is 713-981-7645. And you can also find us on www.diahouston.org. And thank you all for tuning in today.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for always being here and educating us.
Yeah, this it's a really it's an eye-opener, because this is something that just doesn't cross your mind, like, you know. Because like when you're, I'm thinking of sending my son to college, this is not, you know, but not now it is to have that conversation starting now.
Absolutely. You know, exactly. So. We learn something new every single time you guys are here. So thank you.
Of course. And I know school starts for all campus students next week. Ooh. So stay safe if you're listening in and here to help.
Yes. Yes. That's DiaHouston.org.
Yes.
So thank you for tuning in with us here on 99.5 FM. We love you guys, and we will see you next weekend, same time, same place. Bye.